This is episode 132 of Extraordinary Women Radio.
Welcome to Extraordinary Women Radio. I am your host, Cami Gilner. Women are being called to lead with voice, vitality, and vigor. Each week, join me for wisdom-filled interviews with extraordinary women living out loud and making a difference in our world. Their stories will uplift, inspire, and spark your own purpose-driven journey.
Hello, my extraordinary women friends. I hope you had a good Thanksgiving holiday with lots of good food and company surrounding you. I love this time of year, and as we step into the holiday season, I feel the spirit of love all around. Over this next month, I am wishing you great joy and fun and space to slow down and simply be. And today, it is with a great honor that I bring you one of the first of six interviews with the 2020 inductees to the Colorado Women's Hall of Fame. I love my partnership with the Colorado Women's Hall of Fame. Their 2020 induction ceremony will be held on March 18th in Denver, Colorado. You can find details about the induction ceremony at cogreatwomen.org. Today's interview is with Gail Norton, and it was such a pleasure to meet Gail. She is so inspirational. Gail is known for two significant firsts. She was the first woman elected Attorney General of Colorado at a time when only two women had previously held the office of State Attorney General anywhere in the country. She achieved another first when she was appointed Secretary of the U.S. Department of the Interior, the first female leader in the department's 150-year history. In that role, Norton was responsible for managing over 20% of the land area of the United States, a Fortune 500 size budget, and a workforce of 70,000 employees. Gail led efforts that resolved 70-year-old interstate disputes on the Colorado River and instituted a West-wide water conservation program. She championed the president's Healthy Forest Initiative and Cooperative Conservative. As Secretary of the Interior, from 2001 to 2006, Gail played a key role in shaping national energy policies and so much more. I love Gail's insights she shares in this interview on finding resolution to controversial issues. In our country's current state of divisiveness, Gail shares experiences and wisdom on breaking through controversy. There are so many good lessons for all of us in this interview. Let me introduce you to Gail Norton. Well, welcome to Extraordinary Women Radio, Gail. It is such an honor to feature you today.
But thank you. It's great to join you.
Yeah, and congratulations on being inducted into the 2020 Colorado Women's Hall of Fame. What an amazing honor.
Thank you. I was really pleased to get the note that I was going to be involved.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure you were. I think that, I'm really super excited to get to interview all six of the inductees that are going to be inducted in 2020, the non-historical ones, I guess. So the ones that are still here with us. And so it's really an honor to have this partnership with the Colorado Women's Hall of Fame. They're amazing. Just so many amazing women have been recognized over the years.
Well, it's so interesting to look back at the historical ones and see
absolutely
the role that people have played in Colorado and furthering women's role in society.
Absolutely, absolutely. So you have had such an amazing, impactful career. Was there a time or a defining situation that just forever shaped your life, that changed your life, that took you on a pathway that you might not have expected?
I guess I'd have to go back a long way to really pinpoint something. When I was in elementary school and high school, I lived in Thornton, Colorado. My home was on the far side of a little hill from the Denver area. And so every morning on the school bus, I'd come over that hill and look down at downtown Denver, and there was a brown cloud.
I remember those days.
Yes, yes, always this brown cloud of smog. That's Well, that got my attention as a kid thinking about the environment, got me focused along those lines. And also living in fast-growing area, the places that I had enjoyed as farmers' fields and orchards and so forth ended up getting gobbled up by new homes.
Yes.
And so those early experiences got me involved in environmental issues, in studying some environmental courses, and got me interested in politics. And eventually that's what got me into law and eventually into politics.
Oh, that's awesome. That's so awesome. It's interesting that I hear that's where you were growing up, because I actually grew up in a very close to there, just off of Highway 52 and Highway 7. So I was out in those same cornfields, and I go out there to, you know, today and think, wow, things have significantly changed over the years. And
so dramatically changed.
Yes. So this is the pathway that took you into politics. Were your parents encouraging you to go into law and politics? How did that land for you initially?
Well, my parents, neither of them graduated from college. My father went to, I think, about a year of college. My mother did not at all. My father was an aircraft mechanic, and mm-hmm. my mother a homemaker. They always encouraged me, first of all, to read. They were both avid readers, and so I did that. But I remember when I got an allowance as a kid, they talked to me about saving money so I could go to college. It was always known that I was going to go to college. And so that always got me in the mindset that I was going to have a career and going to be actively pursuing intellectual activities. That it was so supportive and so helpful to me as a kid.
And did law come first or did politics come first?
Law was definitely not first.
Okay, so the politics, the change maker in you was what first came to action.
My dad actually made the effort to have me meet the company lawyer for the company he worked for, because until the time I was contemplating law school, I hadn't really met a lawyer.
Okay, so, that's funny.
I was a political science major in college, and when you're thinking about graduating with a political science degree, there aren't that many options unless you go to law school.
Okay.
The law has been a tremendous career choice for me, though. It opens so many doors. There are so many different possibilities of types of activities you can get involved in. The law gives you an opportunity to meet lots of different people and become involved in their lives. When you're getting to know your clients and getting to know the problems that they might have or the dreams they might have, it's an opportunity to walk in other people's shoes.
Certainly.
So the law has given me the opportunity to do that.
And when you were a young girl and you saw this smog cloud over Denver, what was it that went through your mind? What kind of activated in you?
It was at the time that we were starting to hear about environmental issues. As I was in high school, they were passing some major laws, the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act. We were discussing things like the population bomb. It was a time when there was a lot of environmental activism. And even as a high school kid, I went to some meetings and so forth about environmental issues. So it was also important to me that my parents and I spent time in the mountains. Whenever we had a free weekend, my family would head up to the mountains and wander around hiking and looking at the beautiful views. Those things were always important to me, and it was what got me started on the path, first into law, then into natural resources and environmental law, and being involved with the issues that I ultimately dealt with as Secretary of the Interior.
Awesome. And you, I mean, so let's talk about this journey into, because you are known for two very significant firsts. The first was you were the first woman elected Attorney General of Colorado, and you were also the first woman appointed Secretary of the U.S. Department of the Interior. What was it like to, I mean, first of all, how did you land in those roles? And then how did, what was it like to function in those roles that had been previously held only by men?
I got involved in my law practice. Initially, I was with Mountain States Legal Foundation.
Oh.
One of our cases, I ended up representing the legislative leadership of the Colorado General Assembly. And that gave me the opportunity to meet some people who were actually involved in Colorado politics.
Mm-hmm.
I was a libertarian for a while. I was very concerned about freedom, about giving people individual opportunities to pursue their own dreams, mm-hmm. about making sure that we preserved the constitutional basis for the freedom in our society.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually, I ended up going to Washington, D.C. and working in the Reagan administration,
okay.
as the chief attorney for the National Park Service and Fish and Wildlife Service.
Oh, awesome. How cool.
And it was a fascinating job. When I left Washington, I thought about running for the Colorado legislature.
Mm-hmm.
My husband said, look, you've been managing attorneys. The position in Colorado government that is most involved in managing attorneys is attorney general.
Right.
You ought to run for that.
Right.
And my husband and I spent months driving around the state. We borrowed my parents' station wagon. He would drive while I would sleep in the back.
That's so awesome.
We did a real low budget campaign, but I ended up winning.
Oh, that's so awesome. And so what do you attribute winning to? I mean, as you did, I mean, obviously you did the hard work, you were on the road, you were doing it from a very roots oriented approach. What do you attribute winning to in that year?
I think it was partly people were interested in seeing a change. There were the previous attorney or the incumbent attorney general had switched parties, and so some people were upset at him about that. It was also just the amount of work that we put in. In some ways, I'm never quite sure whether being a woman helped or hurt.
Mm-hmm.
From what I heard sometimes on the discouraging side of things, there had never been a woman serve as attorney general anywhere west of the Mississippi.
Oh, wow.
And there had only been two women in all the history of our country who had been state attorneys general.
So you were the third?
Yes.
Yes.
And it ended up with three of us being elected the same night. So,
oh, that's awesome.
We were all tied for third.
Mm-hmm.
But I encountered some people who just weren't really sure that women could be attorneys general.
Mm-hmm.
But I also encountered some people who were enthusiastic about the idea. So I guess it must have been positive in the long run because I won.
Absolutely. And as you go back to that time, I mean, because you think, I know there's people listening and they're tuning, they've got ideas. Gosh, I would love to run for an office. What would you say to them? What would you say, you know, was most important to step into that, you know, giving voice to their opinions, their beliefs, and what they want to stand for? What advice would you give?
Well, first you have to be very introspective about why you really want to run. Mm-hmm. What is it that motivates you? Be clear about what that is. Be realistic about what you can accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
And learn how to explain to people what it is that you want to do. it's also a very valuable experience, no matter what the outcome, because running for office forces you to stand up and brag about yourself.
Right.
To say, this is what I've accomplished. This is what I can do. That's not something that women tend to do.
Exactly.
We tend to be fairly shy about things. We tend to, you know, be the ones in the background letting other people take the credit. And so it's a really beneficial experience for your career, for your self-esteem, for many other things, to be essentially forced into having to stand up and explain yourself, to talk about what your abilities are.
Oh, I love that. And when you were learning to do that, what, you know, what went through your mind, through your heart, through your body as you're starting to speak positively about yourself and your capabilities? How did you step into that?
I wasn't very afraid of speaking. At least I didn't have to overcome a big fear of that. But I just tended to not want to talk about myself that much. It wasn't something that came naturally. My husband was so helpful in being a good speech coach for me.
That's awesome.
Would be at so many meetings with me where I'd have to stand up and give little speeches. And he critiqued and encouraged. And I eventually, after doing so many speeches, improved in my delivery.
So how long was the term as Attorney General for you?
I was elected for a 4-year term and then reelected for a total of 8 years.
Very good. And how was that experience? Tell us a little bit about that experience. And then let's talk about that, being in that role as a woman.
I had a terrific group of people that worked with me. The top managers that I was able to recruit and bring into the office, and then the career attorneys who were there. It was just wonderful to work with such a capable and dedicated group of people. We basically represented every area of Colorado state government. So all of the various state agencies, we were very involved in everything happening in the state. We also did, for example, consumer protection, which was great fun, trying to recover money from those who had scammed people and return the money to the victims. So there was a lot of variety in what we got to do. It was definitely not all easy. We had some controversial issues that we dealt with. But having the opportunity to bat ideas around with the people in my office, the people that I really trusted to have good ideas and good opinions, that helped clarify what our course of action should be and helped clarify what our reasoning was in choosing that course of action.
Very good. And then you eventually you were appointed the Secretary of the U.S. Department of the Interior. Tell us more about that.
This was after I had left as Attorney General. I started working for the Bush campaign, George W. Bush, and it just did some little bit of advising on environmental issues in that campaign. After the election took place, I was amazed to get a call the day after Christmas in 2000 saying, we'd like you to come to Washington for an interview to be Secretary of the Interior.
What a great call to get.
I actually had gotten a voicemail and made my husband come in and listen to the call as I returned the call, because I was afraid I would think I had hallucinated and hadn't really gotten the call. I went out for the interview, but had been involved enough in the transition process that I knew the rumors about who else was under consideration. Mm-hmm. And I felt fairly comfortable because I thought, those people are so good, they are going to get the job. You know, one of them is going to get the job. So mm-hmm. I'm just going to have fun enjoying the experience of getting to do the interview. Well, it turned out I actually got the job.
That's fantastic.
It was quite an experience going through the confirmation process and so forth, because it's all so rapid. I essentially flew out to Washington for the interview, and it was quite a while before I got to come back, and essentially just came back long enough to find all the documents I needed for the confirmation process. And didn't really get to spend any time at home for more than a couple of days until I started the job.
Very good. That's just so fun. And tell us a little bit more about what your top roles were, what your top initiatives were that you worked on at that time.
The Department of the Interior is in charge of basically the lands and natural resources for the federal government.
Okay, so very in alignment with...
And the department manages essentially one out of every 5 acres of land in the United States.
Oh, wow.
It is responsible for offshore oil and gas development, for the federal public lands except for the Forest Service. It has a very important relationship with American Indians. You know, historically, sure. The Bureau of Indian Affairs is mm-hmm. the primary liaison for the Indian tribes, and so there were a lot of issues regarding that. So it was a great variety of different things. I had over 70,000 employees who worked for the department, and so I had a lot of management responsibilities.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how long were you in that role?
I was there for 5 years.
Very good. So as you stepped from, being in that role, let's talk about your leadership style, right? This space of taking on a role like that, tell me a little bit more about your leadership style and how did this serve you in these really important roles?
I tend to want to know the details about mm-hmm. things. And so to a certain extent, I'm a policy wonk. I really want to understand what goes into making the right decisions. I was able to bring in, again, some wonderful people to work with me in the department. That helped a great deal in being able to manage so many issues and so many employees. I spent basically every day going through preparing for meetings, spending many hours in meetings, basically just about every hour I would be in a meeting making a decision about a different issue. So it was a very rapid pace. The most important thing was trying to be collaborative in decision making, making sure I heard from everyone. When I worked at the Department of the Interior the first time around, the secretary was a man named Don Hodel. He was a very wise leader. We would have these meetings where people had a lot of different opinions and conflicting opinions within the department. And he would let everybody say their piece in this big meeting and then say, all right, let's think about what's right. What's the right thing for us to do? And that often would bring people together when they would step back from their ingrained role and think about what the right thing was for the country and for the department. And I tried to use that same technique. I tried to make sure every time we had a decision that was going to be made, everybody who was involved in that decision had an opportunity to say their piece, and then having heard well-informed discussion of the issues, I could make a better decision.
And really just giving everyone space to bring their points, their ideas, their thoughts, their feelings to the table, and then being able to move off of that.
Yes. And that also played out in terms of, I think, my biggest theme for my time at the Department of the Interior, which was cooperative conservation, trying to, at the local level, bring together environmentalists and business people and recreationists and farmers and ranchers, oil and gas people, everybody who had an interest in the area of land we were trying to manage, to see if they could find common ground, find things that could be done in ways that would be mutually beneficial. Maybe you have one area that has motorized recreation and another area that's just for hiking, for example.
And as you, I mean, because this is so important right now, right? I mean, we look across our nation and we see so much divisiveness happening. And, you know, how could we be doing exactly what you're talking about, bringing more people together on local levels on some important issues? What do you hope to see happen?
Well, I have to say I'm discouraged because I think things keep getting to be more and more and more partisan. Mm-hmm. One of the ways in which you can find common ground is often by moving issues more to the local level or the state level. Views are different in different parts of the country.
Right.
And it's easier to make decisions that fit Colorado as opposed to decisions that might fit Louisiana. They might be very different. And so trying to get consensus within Colorado or within Louisiana may be a lot more possible than trying to find nationwide solutions to things. Some issues work for that, some don't.
I think that the other piece of that is really bringing individual people to the table versus, you know, just policymakers. Because if you're bringing the individual people, real people face to face, I think that, you know, working on that regional, that local issue from different aspects, it's a different game, if you will.
Yes, and I think it's sometimes a lot easier to focus on individual issues. I mean, I really like to look at the substance of issues, trying to think beyond just what emotions are involved and calm down and look at what the substance of the issues might be. I think that's something that doesn't tend to happen in Congress anymore. Back when I was Attorney General, I was involved in the National Tobacco Settlement, mm-hmm. and trying to get legislation passed by Congress that would deal with tobacco issues. That ultimately was not successful, and we went back and settled the litigation without involving Congress. But while I was doing that, I had a meeting with a very conservative member of the U.S. Senate. And we were talking about the issues involved in the tobacco settlement. And he said, just a minute, let me call in one of my colleagues. I want to get his perspective on it. And so a few minutes later, lo and behold, Teddy Kennedy walks in. And so you've got, you know, very conservative Orrin Hatch and very liberal Teddy Kennedy. And they worked together.
Right.
They used to work together as colleagues, and it's very sad that we've lost that kind of cooperation.
I agree. I so agree. It's getting to, I mean, if we could take down some of the partisan lines and actually have real conversations, I think we would be able to solve so much more.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So as you've been, you know, over the course of your career, you certainly had to find yourself in the midst of political conflict and media scrutiny. How did you cope with the pressure that came at with, you know, owning jobs and at that level?
First of all, I was fortunate in that I had a fair amount of conflict and scrutiny when I was attorney general that let me gradually get more and more into the high pressure situations that I encountered when I was secretary. When I was going through the confirmation process for to be Secretary of the Interior, one of the questions on one of the Senate documents you had to submit essentially said, "Tell us your deepest, darkest secrets." and I was able to answer by saying, "Yeah, see the attached newspaper reports for all of my secrets." When you've gone through that, it's a lot easier. I think it's very difficult for people who have not been in elected office to be appointed to cabinet positions because they're learning the pressures of government without that the opportunity to go through lower levels and work your way up.
Yeah, so having that experience under your belt really helped you.
Yes. And I also think just from a more general perspective, I was fortunate. I have a fairly calm personality, so it didn't usually bother me that much to start with. But I also remembered that, you know, my friends, the people I respected, knew the other side of the story when I was being criticized. Mm-hmm. And so taking comfort in knowing that the people I care about still care about me, whatever the criticism might be.
Right, right. As you look back over the course of this amazing career that you've had, what is it you're most proud of? What's the thing that stands out for you that you're most proud of that you were able to accomplish as far as change you were able to make or, you know, just anything that's something very specific, right, that you're most proud of?
I think going back to the theme of cooperative conservation, we really did a major effort to encourage our local land managers, the Park Service, Bureau of Land Management, Fish and Wildlife Service, to work together with local communities and to encourage getting people of diverse backgrounds and opinions to come together and at least give advice about how management decisions should be made. Mm-hmm. We had a wonderful conference that took place that was sponsored as a White House conference on cooperative conservation. We brought 1,000 people from all across the country representing different local efforts at that kind of cooperative decision making that was benefiting conservation, and brought them all together to exchange ideas and techniques, to encourage each other, to be able to highlight their successes. The only disappointment about that great conference was that it took place just as Hurricane Katrina was starting to hit the Gulf Coast. And so the attention on it was distracted by a lot of other things.
Right. And, you know, when I think about you bringing this approach to these important conversations, and you mentioned this earlier, there's this calm approach to you. I mean, this calmness about you. And I'm guessing that's a part of that leadership style that you bring is a calm, solid approach to leading a team.
I really tried to and what I found worked the best with a team is if you focus not on who's making a suggestion, but again, focus on the substance of the decision that has to be made. There are often hard feelings and division within an organization if they start feeling like, well, this decision was made because so-and-so's the favorite.
Right, right.
And I didn't get my chance to be involved in making that decision. I was excluded. Mm-hmm. So really making an effort to involve everybody, to inform everybody, and then explain the rationale for the decisions that were made. I think that's a way to strengthen a team and to make everybody feel that they have an opportunity for their ideas to be heard.
Such great wisdom. As having so much great wisdom, having come through this journey that you've been on, how do you mentor and guide women today? How do you, you know, funnel some of this great wisdom that you have to helping women today?
I just joined the board of directors of Liberty Oilfield Services, and they had a women's summit and asked me to come and speak. It was just wonderful to see a couple of hundred young women who were involved in their careers. There were engineers and geologists and accountants and people of many different career talents. It was great to see them, and many of them were getting into areas that women had not been into very much before. The oil and gas industry has tended to be very male-dominated. These women were really moving ahead and doing great things with their careers, and I was very happy to cheer
them
on. That's
awesome. So, you know, I started in the oil and gas industry as an 18-year-old and worked a good portion of my career in oil and gas industry, eventually in oil and gas software companies. So I know the oil and the women in oil and gas, and it's fun to hear that you're getting to mentor them.
It has been very different. I know early in my career when I was representing clients in oil and gas, but also in ranching and, you know, many other things, it was just so rare for women to be playing any kind of leadership role. And yep. I'm just delighted to see that things have changed.
So true. So true. That's awesome. So next year is the 100th anniversary of the Constitutional Amendment recognizing women's right to vote. And I know you sit on the Colorado Women's Vote Centennial Commission. What do you want our listeners to know about this important anniversary?
To me, one of the most important things is remembering how far we've come, how quickly. My grandmother, great-grandmother didn't have the right to vote when they were born.
Right.
It's, I think for young women, they don't realize how great an effort went into gaining that right to vote and how unique an experiment it is that women are now playing a much more equal role in society. It's important that we not lose that ground, that we continue moving ahead. It's also important that we have some patience with the men in our lives, because their role in society has changed as ours has changed.
Yes. And what's your hope for our future as women?
My hope is that people can pursue their careers, their joys, their family life, whatever it is, with much more freedom based on their own dreams, as opposed to society stereotyping and saying, this is what you have to do.
Right. That's nice. And what makes your heart sing and dance in your life today?
Oh, I am very involved with my career, for one thing, because I have just taken on this new role on one board of directors. I'm also on another board. And so I'm very interested in the business issues, what's going on with our economy, and how all those factors are leading to our hopefully continuing prosperity in this country and in the world. My husband and I enjoy traveling. We enjoy taking our dog to the dog park and getting out into the outdoors.
The final question that we always ask is, what three pearls of wisdom can you leave with our audience today, Gail?
One is something I've already touched on. It's learning to brag about yourself when it's appropriate. Have self-confidence, explain who you are, what you want to accomplish. I also think it's important to try and work with people that you enjoy and who share your passions.
Yes.
Life is so much more pleasant if you go to the office and you're excited to see the people that you work with, and you share a vision for what you're trying to accomplish.
I so agree with that.
And I think one of the other things that I get as a question from young women is, you know, what's your career advice? What path should I follow? What exactly should I be planning now so that, you know, 3 steps from now I will be where I want to be? Well, I think some people have accomplished a great deal by doing that. I think it's also important to realize that you don't have to have a thoroughly planned career. When I look back on my life, it looks like a zigzag. I followed, you know, one career path because I was very interested in it and I learned a lot. And then I went off in a different direction and learned a lot by doing that. Being open to new experiences and new possibilities was really interesting along the way. And then when I looked back, I found that those experiences had all built upon each other.
Yes.
And they all came together in a way that was very, very helpful to me with experiences I could draw on later in life.
Oh, I so agree with that. I can look at my zigzaggy pathways myself and go, oh my gosh, that happened, that I learned so much in that particular role or that particular time that somehow makes sense today in the work that I do. And it all fits together in the end, but we certainly can't ever guess where we're going to be 10 years from now.
That is so true.
Yes. Well, this has been such a pleasure, Gail. I'm really honored to get to interview you today and get to meet you. And I hope I get to meet you face to face at the induction ceremony.
I will look forward to it. This has been a delight talking with you.
Bye.
Goodbye.
I hope you liked this episode of Extraordinary Women Radio. If you did, please share this podcast with your own special tribe of women and help spread the love, the dreams, and the inspiration. Are you ready to raise up your voice, your visibility, and your business? I invite you to visit me at CammieGellner.com to find out how you can make heartfelt connections to mindful strategies to ignite an abundant flow of cash and clients into your business. I'd love to hear from you on any of my social media channels. I'm on both Facebook and Twitter. Till next time, my friend, listen to your heart, follow your dreams, and be you.